I thought of a solution to one of your like long-term problems.
I didn't know I had any long-term problems.
You have a couple of things that you're working through.
Okay.
But I thought of a solution this week to one of them. Okay, so for those of you who don't know, Yoshi's knocking over Christmas
decorations. Just knocked over the Christmas brick. No, it's a Christmas piece of wood.
Yeah, it's like a calendar.
Okay.
The kids can say they can write on there what day of December it is or something.
Yeah, she's like eating bark, tree bark. She just got a mouthful of tree bark. Look at her.
Yeah. Oh, no. Don't do that. Don't. That's really messy.
Lee isn't happy about it, so he's cleaning it up. She's trying to eat more of it. Yoshi thinks it's funny.
It's not funny.
Oh. I just wanted a bite. Let me have some. Please.
Okay. I thought of a solution this week to one of your long-term problems.
Okay.
So for those of you who don't know, which I think everybody would know this by now that listens to the show, but Thomas used to live with a guy named Devin Rodriguez before he got married. Mm-hmm. And one of the problems that he had in his relationship with Devin is that Devin just like low key lied about things all the time. Just made stuff up.
Yeah. You just didn't know if he was telling the truth.
So one of the things that Devin Rodriguez always says about himself is that he's colorblind.
Yeah.
And one of the long-term problems in Thomas's life is he's just like, I'll never know if he's actually colorblind or not.
Right.
There's no way to find out.
Right.
Okay. Well, I thought of a solution to this. We were, a few months back, we were on our way with a bunch of high school folks to Chicago to help out the Mission USA, the bridge, to be the host team. And we've got, you know, a giant van and another like SUV full of high school kids. And a really fun game to play when you're on a long car ride is a game that I don't know who invented it, but we heard about it from Caden Dowdy's family. A game called Banana Wheels.
Oh, I thought Judy Sharp taught you that one.
No. But Banana Wheels is a game where you're driving down the road and with a bunch of people in your car, and when you see a car that's yellow, you shout out Banana Wheels. Mm. And that's the basics of the game. There's a lot of really complicated rules. We usually let Thomas be the referee. He hands out penalties and awards
points.
It didn't
go well this time. They thought I was making things up, but I wasn't.
No, it's just
the actual rule book.
It's the rules of the game that were handed down to us from the Constitution, and everybody knows it.
Yeah.
But anyway, so you have to call out yellow cars. You can see, it's great when you're on the interstate or in a big city because they're just kind of everywhere and everybody gets really competitive. And I called it out first. No, you didn't. Oh, and you called out a car that you thought was yellow because it was really far off. It's not.
Yeah.
And so now you're in the penalty box for however many cars. Okay. So one thing about Thomas's old roommate is he's very competitive.
Yeah, he is.
So my suggestion is you start a game of Banana Wheels on a car ride with Devin Rodriguez and you let his competitive nature go to war against his desire to either lie to you or tell you the truth about whether or not he's colorblind, and we see which one wins out.
I already know. Look, it's just tough. That's one of those where you don't want to be wrong on. Like that's the nature of his lie. It's like, which it seems like even calling it a lie right now, if he's actually colorblind,
then you're making fun of somebody's
giant jerk. But history would say
impairment.
That history would say that he is messing with me, and I don't know. I just have no idea.
Yeah, because if you're just like, I insist that you're not, then he's like, yeah, thanks a lot, man. I've really struggled through my life with this impairment.
Yeah, and I think even his wife is like, I don't really know about this one.
Yeah,
because it's not like he ever came out with like a purple pants and a red shirt on, you know, and it was like, hey, man.
Hey, buddy.
This isn't working. Like, that never happened.
Like, the same tone thing that's like just a little bit off, but he can't see it because it's all gray to him.
Yeah, that never happened in our roommatehood.
This is what I'm saying. You take him on a car ride, you play Banana Wheels, and you tell him, like, I'm about to own you in Banana Wheels. It's going to be so on.
Mm.
And then that competitive nature comes out. And then you just add a couple of little rules about a way that you can get out of the penalty box. Like, you know, you identify like a teal car or something like that. You know, you see the rare midnight blue. And if he's able to correctly identify an SUV that's like plum colored or brandy or something like that. Brandy. And all of a sudden you know that the whole thing has been a ruse.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good idea. I'm going to keep that in my back pocket.
or just let Reggie know and see if she can try it.
Yeah. Hey, Reg, try this thing.
Because is he competitive enough to unmask the lie?
Oh, I don't know. I think he's really smart.
The really fun thing was when we were on that drive and like finding out which of your high school kids are like low key super competitive.
Well, it was really just one.
Yeah. That's,
and it was like the most surprising thing in my life. And now I can't undo it.
Yeah. No, you can't unsee it.
Yeah.
The competitiveness
of, yeah, Megan Reeser is the most. I mean,
it was shocking.
Yeah.
I thought she was going to sit in the back of the car and like every now and then call out banana wheels, but no, like she took over and she got really upset with you whenever she thought you were making rules up.
Yeah. And about a month later, Maddie and I like stayed at the Reeser's house with Megan and Nathan for like a week, just hanging out while Bill and Maria were out of town. Yep. It was awesome. And at one point we had a housewide Nerf war, which... Some of you listening is like, that's awesome. Some of you are like, Thomas's wife at that point was 33 weeks pregnant. So Maddie played good and hard for a few minutes and then she became like a sniper and just sat on a couch and fired. Like at one point, I army crawled on the ground while my wife was standing over me and just firing darts at me.
Oh my gosh.
I'm not very good at army crawling, but also
no,
like,
you're enormous.
Yeah.
Like the whole idea of army crawling is make your profile as small as possible.
Yeah, Megan went out of the doors and snuck around the house to sneak up on Nathan and myself. Like it was like this is wow. competitive, and she took us on 2-on-1.
Like she comes in with camo and face paint and stuff.
Yeah, you're just like what? Who is this person?
That's fantastic. Welcome to Ancient and New. This is a Bible study podcast. We're going to talk about some scriptures that have been encouraging us. Here comes yawn number one from Tomboy.
I don't even think about it anymore until you get that look on your face. Does no one else in the world yawn? Nobody? You don't yawn ever? If anybody listening to this does not yawn, then I want to know.
Thomas is throwing his hands up in the air like George Costanza.
I've been up since 5:30. Of course I'm a little bit tired. I have this new app that keeps track of how well I sleep. Like it listens.
I downloaded it immediately, by the way.
Yeah, like you want to know how much sleep I got last night? I don't know what is wrong with me. I don't know what. Like the other day, she asked me like, "Why have you been so sleepy?" And I was like, "I don't know. I don't know why I'm so sleepy." Well, last night I got 5.5 hours of sleep. I don't know how that happens. I was in bed for 7.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it was literally just like, yeah, you just didn't do well. Literally the last hour I was basically awake is what it's saying.
Yeah. Wow. The whole last hour?
Yeah, from 4:49 on, I was awake.
My stats from Tuesday night were I was in bed for 5 hours 36 minutes and I was asleep for 4 hours 24 minutes.
This is not healthy. The previous night I got 6 hours. Previous night 6:30.
My regularity was 95%. I don't even know what that means.
I think it just means that you were like
podcast.
I think it's a psychology podcast. I learned about this app, which just this blows my mind. I thought of this the other day. The first person to tell me about this app was my AP psychology teacher, my senior year of high school.
Vondel Shipley?
Yeah, which I was like, wow, that was cutting edge because yeah, that was 2012. Anyways, I just aged myself.
Have you been using that app since high school?
I thought you were gonna ask me if I've been reading the Bible lately.
Have you been reading the Bible lately?
No, I've gone through periods with the app.
Okay.
I just re-downloaded it because I've been really sleepy.
But you have been reading the Bible.
I have been.
So where should we go in the Bible today?
Mark.
Capitulo.
9.
Oh.
Number 9.
Did I catch a niner in there?
Number 9. Been watching the Beatles doc. So,
oh, yeah.
You know. Really enjoyed it. This is going to be interesting. And I told Lee before this, like this is the most prepped we've ever been for this show. Just a heads up, because I told Lee, hey, I think I'm gonna talk about the transfiguration. I don't have a completed thought. Let's see what happens. It's not true because I did have a completed thought when I read this week. I just did not remember it, and I don't know what anything in my journal says.
Well, that's because no human could read what you write.
That's because it's specifically for the Lord. He knows. I have nothing to hide from him.
Oh gosh.
Or from anybody else, but my handwriting is atrocious. Yeah, we're going to look at the moment. We're going to look at the Transfiguration, which is such an... It's just an interesting piece of scriptures, and it's really cool.
Yeah.
And I love this because a lot of people would say Mark is kind of Peter's gospel. Like, Mark did a lot of interviewing of Peter for this. And I'm going to talk a little bit about Peter here. So, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. After 6 days, Jesus took Peter, James, and John with him and led them up a high mountain where they were all alone. There he was transfigured before them. His clothes became dazzling white, whiter than anyone in the world could bleach them, which I think that's such a cool sentence.
Yeah.
And there, just the idea of like, they had some form of something that bleached some, like there's a term for bleach
right
back then. And there appeared before them Elijah and Moses, who were talking with Jesus. Peter said to Jesus, "Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. Let us put up three shelters, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He did not know what to say. They were so frightened. Okay. And then it says, then a cloud appeared and covered them, and a voice came from the cloud. "This is my son whom I love. Listen to him." Okay. So I think my like knee jerk reaction to this was to zoom into Peter and think about like the idea that, there's something cool going on in the spiritual ether here. There's something really cool going on. Peter has no idea what it is, so he does his best guess, which is just, this is a good thing. Let's put up a shelter, which in my mind, like reading this, I'm like, okay, clearly that wasn't the right answer because it says so basically, right? Like he's basically admitting, yeah, he didn't know what was going on. He didn't know what to do. So it's like, okay, clearly that wasn't the right answer. But I think if I was there, I don't know that my first thought would have been like, hey, let me build you a shelter, but it would have been something along those lines. Like it's okay. Not, I'm not amiss, you know, like Peter, to me, Peter's not crazy. I'm not like, dude, gotcha. You screwed up on that. You really dropped the ball on that. But it was cool for me to think about this from that standpoint. Like there's something going on in the spiritual. I don't fully understand it. Peter had the wherewithal to say like, this is a good thing. I get that. This is a good thing. So I'm going to do what I can do best with this. And I'm trying to learn from that. Like, okay, there's something going on that I can't understand between Jesus and my life. Something, or whatever the thing is. The Lord's doing something that I can't really understand. I understand that it's a good thing. Sometimes it doesn't feel like it. Sometimes it doesn't seem like it. Yeah. Whatever the case is. But I know it must be a good thing in some way. Where it's coming together for my good in some way. What's my appropriate response to that? How do I handle that? Do I have a knee-jerk reaction and go with what pops into my head first? Which, like, again, I don't think Peter did a terrible thing here, obviously. He just did what he could think of doing. It was like, let me build like a little wooden shanty with whatever's sitting around. Probably rocks. You know, like let me stack some rocks up. I don't even know how he would build a shelter. It's right. So interesting.
Yeah.
For me.
At 9,000... At 9,000 feet.
Is this Mount Horeb? What do they say this is?
Mount Hermon.
Sorry.
Up in Lebanon. Yep. So like at 9,000 feet, what are you looking at as far as trees?
Not much.
Yeah.
Definitely not in the Middle East. Like,
yeah.
In
just like maybe some cedars up there.
Possibly, but like it's a different, like even, you know, there anyway, there's not a ton as far as trees go, you know, like you just got to put those things together. And I honestly think I've Google image searched Mount Hermon multiple times while reading this and it's pretty barren.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think there's snow there, which is kind of a cool thing.
There's snow up at the top.
Yeah. But anyways, I told Lee, hey, I don't really have a completed thought on this. I just remember thinking like, hey, I know there's something going on. The Lord's doing something.
Yeah.
There's something going on behind the scenes. There's obviously some reason why Moses and Elijah are here talking to the Lord about something. And he wanted James, John, and Peter to see this for some reason. Yeah. He brought them along for some reason. They don't have a full understanding of what it is. It's a good thing. They don't really understand what it is. What are they going to do with it? In my mind, obviously the three of them never forgot this. And it was a backbone to their faith for a long time.
Peter talks about it in 2 Peter.
Exactly. So like this is a thing they would never ever forget. And I would imagine it shaped them forever. I would imagine that in moments like when Peter did what he did later, even when he is outrightly sinning against God and saying, I do not know this man. He could have a moment in the back of his mind at some point where he said like, but I did see this thing happen.
Yeah.
Like even if like, cause Tom's always said this really, our pastor Tom's always said this cool thing where he is, where Peter maybe even saying like, I do not know this man. Like why would our Messiah let himself be captured and killed? Like, I don't understand this. I know him to be the Messiah because
I knew him.
The chapter before this, he says to Jesus, you are the Messiah, period. Like there's no arguing that. That's what Peter says. He knows who Jesus is. And I think that this moment right here was something that he never forgot about. He could always fall back on and always remember it to be true about God in tough circumstances. And I'm trying to think like in moments in my life where there's obviously something the Lord's doing behind the scenes that I can't fully understand. How do I reshape how I think about that?
Yeah.
How do I not knee-jerk reaction? Okay, what's the best possible thing I can do with this situation? Or like, because good for Peter, at least his was like, I'm just going to build a shelter up. A lot of times when the Lord's doing something in my life, I'm like, eject, get me out of this seat. Like, I don't, anyone else but me. Or like, why is this happening? Don't let this be a thing. I thought it was going to go this way. Why is it going this way? You know, there's all those inappropriate responses. Not inappropriate in the sense that my feelings are wrong, but based on what the Lord's doing, he's in control. He's in charge as he was in this situation. Again, incompleted thought, but you got a download of, that's what was going through my mind at 5:30 the other morning when I was reading this and drinking my hot beverage of choice. Just like, I was just trying to understand Peter's mindset here.
Yeah. It's interesting because there, you know, there's so many cool things about this that other gospels talk about this moment. And
I needed a pastor's touch on my thought.
Well, when you think about like, when you, you know, that thing of like, we try to encourage people to do when we're reading through scripture with them of like, think about like, if you were the director of a film, like how would you make a film of this? And when you think about the scene, like let yourself steep in it. It's so interesting because they were at the top of a 9,000 foot peak. It was in the middle of the night. There was snow on the ground up there, and like you've been on a day hike, you've been hiking like all day and you're tired and you're sweaty, but now it's
less
now
oxygen, it's
snow. Less oxygen.
It's cold.
It's night. And then all of a sudden, like Jesus explodes into light. Like in, I was quoting it this weekend that Psalm 104 says he wraps himself with light as with a garment.
Yeah.
And in
the light of the world, which I think is another cool thing from John 1, you know?
Right. And it's like there's a place in when the Gospel of Luke tells this, the story of the Transfiguration, it says that he was just like light standing still. Mm. That's what he was like. He was like lightning. It's like a flash of lightning that, what if it just stayed? If it didn't go away, like how bright he was. And it says when, in the version in Luke, it's really, really helpful because it says when Moses and Elijah showed up, they were talking with Jesus about his departure, his exodus. That's the actual word it uses. They were talking with Jesus about his exodus, about his leaving. In other words, Moses and Elijah showed up to talk to Jesus about the cross.
Yeah.
So here's the cool thing about this contextually. When you look at, like in Mark, it's in the previous chapter. In Luke, it's in the same chapter. But right before this day hike up to the top of Mount Hermon and the Transfiguration, Jesus started to tell his disciples, we're going to Jerusalem. I will be rejected, betrayed, arrested, and killed. And then on the third day, I'll rise again. That's when he started telling these guys this. And that's when Peter looked at Jesus and said, that's not going to happen to you. You are not going to die like that. And then Jesus looked back at Peter and said, get behind me, Satan.
It's a very common t-shirt to see in the Southeast. You ever notice that?
Except sometimes in the Southeast you see the, get behind me, Saban.
Oh, wow.
Is that a t-shirt? I do see the t-shirt, the not today, Satan. t-shirt.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. No, I've definitely seen Get Behind Me say
it. Have you?
Okay. Yeah, and I think it's... Yeah. I think there's usually like a pastry included on the shirt. That's how I think it's like a... I think it's like...
Get thee behind me, Satan. I don't want to eat this. I want to eat this donut, but I'm not going to.
Right.
Yeah, so like... Yeah, so it's never a good thing when Jesus calls you Satan, but like it, but that's what, you know, cause Peter's just like, you're not going to die like that. And he's like, hey, you're talking like Satan right now. I am going to do that. So then they go up on this mountain and basically like Jesus has let them in on, this is why I came. And the disciples are like, no, we don't like that. And then all of a sudden two dudes who are like, in kind of the waiting room of heaven, basically, are like, hey, we want to talk to you about it because we really need you to do this. So we want to pump you up and give you some encouragement because we're like in heaven on credit. And if you don't do it, we don't get to stay. And so it's like in a moment, he needed somebody to pump him up. And so those guys show up to like pump up Jesus. Like these guys may not get it, but we know that you came for this and you've got to do it. I don't know. I mean, it feels like one of those things where maybe Peter was saying like, hey, that thing that you were saying about dying, let's not do that. But this thing where you can like glow in the dark and be majestic, let's do that. Let's just stay here and not go into Jerusalem where you're going to do the dying piece. But I do think it's so cool that Moses and Elijah show up to be an encouragement to Jesus when his friends were such a discouragement.
Right. Yeah, I think that's cool. I think my like landing thought I had was like, what are things the Lord may be doing right now that I do not understand?
Yeah.
And how am I going to
respond?
How am I going to approach that? Yeah. What do I need to do? I need to be wise before I do something.
Before I just start building a shelter.
Yeah. Which is like, yeah, it sounds like I'm knocking Peter. I'm like, dude, you do what you, you
well, I mean, the voice of God, the Father did. He was just like, hey, this is my son. You need to listen to him.
Sure.
Because he's like, he did not know what he was saying.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it is an amazing thing to realize, like, there are things about Jesus that are so, so beyond my understanding. I have no idea who I'm messing with here.
Right.
That's so cool.
That was my thought. Lead us.
I want to look at Daniel chapter 3.
Oh, wow. Is this our second? Did I go to Daniel recently? No. I just read it recently.
Oh, okay.
I was like, dang, second trip through Daniel in the past few months.
This is like one of the most familiar Bible stories in all the world. It's
yes.
A story of...
Especially if you grew up in the Southeast. Yeah. I'm not trying to knock our region of origin. It's just...
If you grew up in the Southeast, chances are good that you heard this story told on a flannel graph by a person who was wearing a shirt that said, get thee behind me, Satan, with a donut on it.
And listened in between the tellings of that to the guy called the Donut Man, which you do not know somehow.
No, I don't know.
I mean, he's straight out of the 80s. I don't know how you didn't know this guy.
I don't know the Donut Man.
Oh, you need to look it up. He does not live on Drury Lane.
It's going to mess my YouTube algorithm up, isn't it? Gonna give me a bunch of 80s commercials.
We don't need. You would like that.
Okay. This is the story of King Nebuchadnezzar setting up a golden statue that everybody has to bow down to.
What do you think his friends called him?
Nebi?
That's what I was wondering.
Did he have any friends? Like, everybody had to call him O King, right? O Mighty King. O
yeah, but like, what's his wife call him? You know?
Nezer? Hey, Nezzy. Nebby? What do you think?
I don't know. I just like, hey, Nebuchadnezzar, come in here.
Hey, Neb. I feel like it would be Neb. It's like Ned.
Yeah.
Have you ever known a Ned? I'm now convinced it's Neb. Ned Flanders. Oakley doakley, neighbor. Yeah, so Nebuchadnezzar builds this statue. Everybody's got to bow down to it. When you hear the music play, you bow down to the statue. Everybody did except for these three dudes. These guys that he has that they're part of the royal family in Jerusalem. They were stolen when Nebuchadnezzar invaded Jerusalem, and they were, by the way, really sad story. This is true of Daniel too. Part of the royal family, everybody in the royal family that Nebuchadnezzar put in his court to work for him, they made them all eunuchs. And so these were teenage guys stolen from their homes, immediately turned into eunuchs and taken to a foreign country. And you have to just do whatever you're told. Awful, awful story. And he makes the statue. Everybody, the music starts playing. Everybody bows down except for these three guys. He has renamed them Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. That was not their given names in Hebrew. But, you know, and then he is told that they're not bowing down. So he interviews them and, you know, and he's like, listen, don't you know that I can have you thrown into this fiery furnace? That's the punishment for not worshiping this statue that I've made. And they're like, that's fine. You do what you got to do. And he's like, wait, aren't you afraid of the fiery furnace? And they're like, they're basically like, no, I mean, look, our God that we serve is able to save us from the furnace. If he wants to, he could just save us in some amazing way from whatever you would want to do with us. We're not afraid of you in any way. Right. But if he doesn't, then we will die and we'll go immediately to him. So we're not afraid of that. But even if we were to die, we are not going to be unfaithful to him,
right?
Because that's our relationship with him. Mm. So we're not going to bow down. So the king says, okay, make the furnace like 7 times hotter than it normally is. So they increase the heat 7 times hotter than whatever. It's so hot that when they throw the boys into the furnace, the guys throwing them into the furnace were burned and died. And then the king looks into the furnace and he says, wait a minute, what's going on? And the guys that work for him are like, what? And he's like, didn't we throw 3 guys into the furnace? And they said, yeah. And he said, well, look, not only are they fine, but there's a 4th guy in there with them. And the 4th guy looks like the Son of God. Hmm. And you're like, so freaking cool. Like in the middle of the Old Testament, this is what biblical scholars and theologians call a theophany, which is where basically before the first Christmas, in some funky way, Jesus shows up in the Old Testament.
Yeah.
Happens a few times. There's one time that it happens with the parents of the judge Samson. This messenger from God, or the angel of the Lord, it says, shows up and says to Samson's parents, you're going to have a baby. And they're like, what's your name? And he says, my name is Wonderful. And you're like, wait, who else do I know that's called Wonderful? The Wonderful Counselor.
Counselor.
Yeah. So, and it happens in the book of Joshua, and there's a probable one in the book of Genesis, chapter 18.
Jacob wrestles.
Jacob, yep, that's right. Yeah, chapter what, 26 or something like that in Genesis?
Yeah, that dude
something
just,
like that.
I just touched his hip and it was like, wow.
Yeah, limp for the rest of your life.
Can you imagine? It's like the next time someone touches your hip, it just basically explodes.
Isn't that what happens to your ankles every time you walk?
Yeah,
exactly. In any case, so he says, there's now 4 guys in the furnace and the 4th one looks like a Son of God. So he tells them to come out of the furnace. They come out, and this is really, really cool. And you'll like this because of your love of all things camping. But not only were they not unharmed, no hair on their head was singed, no thread on their clothes was singed, and then it specifically says they didn't even smell like smoke.
Mm.
After they've been just walking around in this furnace.
Yeah, I mean, there's a thing that happens if you're someone who's ever sat around a campfire, it takes like 4 good shampooings.
Oh yeah,
you know, like
yes,
it, before you stop getting whiffs of campfire.
Oh yeah,
which is one. It's one of my favorite things about sitting around a campfire.
Awesome.
But it also is like that's crazy.
Yeah. So this says this in Daniel 3 at the very near the end. They saw that the fire had not harmed their bodies, nor was a hair of their head singed. Their robes were not scorched, and there was no smell of fire on them. Okay, so here's what I want to read in verse 28. That whole thing to say this. Then Nebuchadnezzar said, praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent his angel and rescued his servants. They trusted him and defied the king's command and were willing to give up their lives rather than serve or worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I decree that the people of any nation or language who say anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be cut into pieces and their houses be turned into piles of rubble. Okay, here's my sentence. For no other god can save in this way. That little sentence right there, that little phrase, that just stopped me in my tracks when I was reading Daniel last week. It's just that he says, for no other God can save in this way. And I was just, it just got me like I just started kind of writing down a prayer to Jesus. Like, that's right. Nobody saves the way you do. And specifically this being a foreshadowing of the way Jesus saves. It's like, I'm going to come down there and I'm going to enter into the difficult time that you're going through, and I'm going to go through it with you. Mm. Like, this is not, nobody makes up a God like that. Right. Nobody invents this story. Wow. Nobody writes this, that this is, there is an almighty God. And the way that he saves you is he actually comes down and enters into your problem and takes care of it and makes it so that he makes certain death not harm you. Mm. Like, there's a place like in John chapter 11 where Jesus says to Martha, the sister of Lazarus, anybody who believes in me, you won't really die. I know you can't really understand this. This is like another thing like you were talking about before, like a thing Jesus is up to that I just can't understand. Mm. It'll look like you're dead. You won't really die. Right. Like, I'm just going to take your certain death and I'm going to turn it into a nothing. And I'm going to go through the whole thing with you. No God can save like this. No God does like this is so special. This is what Jesus does. He comes, and it's cool for us to think about this at Christmas too, that he comes down here and he goes through it with us. And he takes our problems and our sufferings on himself.
Yeah.
And then he nullifies them for us.
Yeah. Yeah. You may be sitting there thinking like, well, I've never been thrown into a furnace. No, you probably have not, because you wouldn't be listening to this. But I guarantee you, it's one of those things I don't think we practice well as believers, which is pointing out moments in our life God obviously was there in. Yeah. Once, and like, it may be like right now, this is too fresh. I can't think about that.
Yeah.
But maybe it's like, hey, 2 years ago, have you thought about that thing that happened that one time?
Yeah.
And thought, where was evidence that God was right there with me in that?
Right.
Because I don't think we do a good job of that. I think it's really easy for us as Christians to say, yeah, that was a God thing, and then move on.
Right, yeah.
I don't think it's super easy. It's not that it's hard. It's just I don't think we do a good job. I don't think we're practicing it.
Yeah, what if you had a list of the coolest ones that you've experienced, and every now and then you just went to it and read them, and you're like, oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, yeah, I know. And I need to keep like a... I need to keep like a journal or something of just like, these are moments where God has like specifically been right there with
me. Furnace journal.
The furnace journal.
The furnace journal.
The fernal. Is that a word?
Nezzy? Maybe she calls him Nezzy.
Nez. But yeah, I mean, I just think it's funny because the Israelites were very well practiced at that.
Yeah, yeah. That was their whole, it was a lot of their job.
Yes.
Was to have songs and services and liturgies just to remember certain events.
Right. And I think like we do a good job in the Christian world of remembering those things. Like, hey, remember the time God did this for these people, or he showed up for the Israelites in this way. Even right now at Christmas, we do a great job of remembering Jesus coming as a baby. It's awesome. I like, what if we specifically in our personal walks got good at that? I don't know.
That would be awesome. That's a really good encouragement. Yeah.
You are a good encouragement on this one.
Oh, you are a good encouragement.
I thank you. Do you ever, like, when you're a little bit congested, do you ever say things completely wrong? I didn't mean to say I thank you.
I thank you. It's so formal. You. Like when Thomas gets congested, he just turns into a really formal version of himself. Like, hey, Thomas, grandmother. How are you doing? He's like, good day, sir. Like,
grandmother.
No cookies for
no
me today,
no cookies for me, grandmother. Develop a taste for freeform jazz.
Guys, Merry Christmas. I'm Lee.
I'm Thomas.
This has been Ancient and New.
Oh, I know what it is to be alone. And I know what it's like to leave a home. Heads turn when I'm in the room. It's a silent shame I'm living through. but I know who I am today. God, give me strength, God, in my way. Surely they one day will know that it's a beautiful life. It's a beautiful life I'm living. It's a beautiful life. It's a beautiful life I'm living. Oh, what love is this that draws me near? A child is born through mother's tears. It's a beautiful life. It's a beautiful life I'm giving. Now you know what it is to be alone. Son, you know what it's like to leave a home. Don't take my baby boy from me. Oh, the shame you'll wear to set us free. Now the skies turn a different shade. I watch your breaths fade away. Surely they one day will know that it's a beautiful life. It's a beautiful life you're living. It's a beautiful life. It's a beautiful life you're living. Oh, what love is this that draws me near? A child is born through mother's tears. It's a beautiful life. It's a beautiful life you're giving for me.